Okay, so yesterday we spoke about the Pesach of Yoshiyahu towards the end of the first Beis HaMikdash. So now we're going to fast forward about 600 years, 500 years to the conclusion of the second Beis HaMikdash. Hillel is a young man in Babel. He comes from a very, very prestigious lineage. He can trace himself back to Malchus Beis David. And he decides to visit his, and to learn with two very famous Rabbanim who taught in Israel. Those two Rabbanim were named Shmai and Atalia. One was the Nasi, and one was the head of the Beis Din. So Hillel decided he wanted to travel to Israel. He was 40 years old. We have no record that he was planning on staying in Israel. Well, we know he could travel to Israel to learn there. He was a very poor person. Chazal tells us, the Gemara says, he could hardly afford the entrance fee into the Beis HaMedrash. So he would work, he would collect wood, and he would donate whatever wood he could to be admitted to the Beis HaMedrash. One day he couldn't, and he climbed on top of the roof to listen in, and it was a snowy, cold day, and he almost froze to death. His body went limp, and he almost got frostbite. And the only reason that the people in the Beis HaMedrash took notice is because they saw this figure clouding the light in the skylight. They took him down and brought him. So Hillel was this budding Talmud Chacham, 40 years old, traveling from Babel to learn in the yeshiva of Shmai and Atalia and Kaaba. He just closed the door. And all of a sudden, he's in the Azara. Erev Pesach, 1 year, about 100 BCE, more or less, 100 BCE. And that year, Erev Pesach happens to be on Shabbos. This year, Erev Pesach was Erev Shabbos. That year, Erev Pesach was Shabbos. So for us, there's a range of halakha complications when Erev Shabbos, Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos. Those who bake matzos, obviously you can't bake the matzos on Erev Pesach. If you like to bake your matzos Erev Pesach, that's one problem. For us, more or less, all the Seder preparations, you have to make sure you prepare the main melach either beforehand or with the shinroi. You shouldn't be grating the horseradish. Charoses is a problem of lisha. So there are minor issues. Of course, a major issue for us is tashbisu. We can't burn chametz at Erev Pesach on Shabbos. So we perform Bior on air on Friday, and then we just throw the whatever chametz we have, we throw into the garbage bins. But in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, the complications surrounded Karban Pesach. Are you allowed to be makir of Karban Pesach when Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos? Now, Erev Pesach falling on Shabbos is a very exciting theological phenomenon, because Pesach and Shabbos, Pesach is really part B of Shabbos. Shabbos reminds us that Hashem created the world, but Pesach taught humanity that Hashem actually intervenes in the world. People thought HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, but he wound it up like some clock, and it runs on its own power, and he created forces of nature. And Pesach demonstrated that not only is HaKadosh Baruch Hu this transcendent being who is all-powerful and omnipotent, but he also intervenes in nature and directs human affairs and science and psychology and politics. So this juxtaposition between Shabbos and Pesach, where first you experience Shabbos, and then right afterwards Pesach as a sequence, is very powerful theologically, but very complicated halachically. So Hillel is standing in the Azara, and the question arises, can you shecht the Karban Pesach on Erev Pesach, which coincides with Shabbos? Performing shechit on an animal is considered chavalah. You take making a woman the animal, you're violating an issur d'oraisa under normal circumstances. You are allowed to bring korbanos that are unique to Shabbos. You are allowed to be makir the Karban Musaf on Shabbos. You are allowed to be makir the Karban Daman on Shabbos. Obviously, voluntary korbanos that aren't tethered to Shabbos, you shouldn't be makir. So if you're chayiv an ola, you should wait till after Shabbos. If you're chayiv a shlamim, you should wait till after Shabbos. Where does Pesach fall between those two? And as I mentioned earlier today, and I'll mention it tomorrow, Pesach is this very strange korban. It's a korban that's not really a korban. It's a korban yachid. It's a korban sibur that everyone offers. So the question arose, should they sacrifice the korban Pesach, Erev Pesach, that coincides with Shabbos? Now, the Gemara suggests that it was a mystery that people didn't really know the answer to. It's hard to imagine that. First of all, because the Pesach that I spoke about 2 days ago, the Pesach of the second year in the desert, happened to fall out Erev Pesach on Shabbos. The Gemara on Shabbos, here are your sources. Source number 4, Midrash Yarcha Denisim Dehayshata Chad B'Shabbos. That year, that second year in the desert, not the first year in the desert, the first year in the desert, Pesach fell out on Thursday. We have Siddur Mitzrayim on Thursday. The second year in the desert, Pesach fell out on the Sunday, which means that Erev Pesach fell out on Shabbos, and they were makir the Karban Pesach, as per the description in Baal Osah. So all you have to do is know the Gemara on Shabbos and know the tradition and look back in Baal Osah. Second of all, Pesach for Erev Pesach coinciding with Shabbos happens at least once every 7 years. So it's inconceivable that all those people who were attending the Azara, what probably happened was there was a little break in the transmission. They knew that you should be makriv, you should sacrifice the Korban Pesach. They just didn't know what the source was, they didn't know what the drasha was. They're a little bit uncertain. Who in particular was uncertain? The reigning Nasi. The reigning Nasi was a member of an aristocratic family named B'nai B'tera. The B'tera family had possessed the Nasius for several generations leading up to the transition point, which we'll describe today. We don't know too many of them. One was, of course, the most famous one, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, Rabbi Shimon ben Becerra, but there was a whole group of people called B'nai B'Serah. Interestingly enough, some of them, after the story we'll discuss today, moved to Babel and still exercise influence. And one in particular came back to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Maybe I'll talk about this interesting conversation he had with Yochanan ben Zakkai a little bit later in another generation. Anyway, source number one, the Gemara in Pesachim recounts, Tanur Rabbanan, Halacha Zun et Alma B'nai B'Serah. The Nasi, whoever the person or the group of people who were associated with the Nasi, this group of people from the Becerra lineage, they didn't know the halacha, they didn't know the answer. Source number two, Pam achas chal arba asar lios b'Shabbos. Erev Pesach coincided with Shabbos, shachachu v'lo yadu in Pesach doches haShabbos Allah. They couldn't decide whether Pesach was doches Shabbos or wasn't doches Shabbos, the Korban Pesach. Again, most Rishonim believe that they knew the answer, they just didn't know the source, and without knowing the actual source, they're a little uncomfortable exercising what would otherwise be a Chilul Shabbos. What happened? Amru Lahem, after scurrying around and not finding the answer, line number three, Adam Echad Yesh She'alah Mibabel. There's this young Talmud Chacham that has recently made Aliyah from Babel, the Hillel HaBavli Shema, and his name is Hillel HaBavli, Sheshimesh Shnei Gedolei Hador, and he's visiting Israel to study with these two Gedolim, Shmaya Ve'Avtalia, line number four. And he knows the answer, whether Pesach is Dach HaShabbos. They call him, maybe he wasn't in the Azara immediately, but they call for him. It seems to be this took place Erev Shabbos, not Erev Pesach 1 Shabbos, took place a few days earlier. Line number five, Shachu V'Karulo, Amrulo, they asked him, Chlomata Yodeh, and Pesach Dach HaShabbos Olo, Amar Lahem, Bechi Pesach Echad, Yeshon, V'Shan, Shadach HaShabbos, and he answered that Pesach would indeed be Docha Shabbos. So those two proofs were as follows. There are 13 different mannerisms or tools by which Torah can be translated and decoded and interpreted. These are referred to as the Yud Gimel Midos Sha'atara Nidrashas Bahem. Rabbi Shmuel collected them in the Braisa. Many people recite them right before Pesukim Zimur on a daily basis. One of them is called a Gzera Shavah. A Gzera Shavah is a textual bridge. We have the same word appearing in two different locations. And you can transfer halachos from one location as if you're walking over a bridge to another location. So Hillel's first stab was to issue a Gzera Shavah. The Pesach is described as Bin Mo'ado. I mentioned this 2 days ago. Parshas Balos, so the Pesach has to be offered Bin Mo'ado. The Korban Tamid is also described as Bin Mo'ado. So Hillel established a Gzera Shavah. If Tamid is Docha Shabbos, and we know the Tamid, but we'll see why it's Docha Shabbos, and the word Mo'ado appears for Tamid, then Korban Pesach should also be Docha Shabbos in the same fashion as a Korban Tamid. For some reason, Hillel himself felt a little uncomfortable with this form of the drasha, so he added another drasha. The most powerful drasha, that may not even be part of the 13 that I mentioned, is called a Kal V'Chomer. Kal V'Chomer is essentially calculus, where you calculate two halachos. One halacha appears to be more weighty, one halacha appears to be less weighty. The less weighty halacha is called Kal. The more weighty halacha is called chomer. Any halacha that I apply to the less weighty halacha, I can, by extrapolation, apply to the more weighty halacha. It's at the core of Talmudic analysis and Talmudic logic. It isn't even a drasha. It's called just basically calculation. If I want to know whether I can fit into that seat, well, or a smaller person can fit. If I can fit into the seat, I'm a taller person, and a smaller person in the seat. Will that seat hold my weight? So if I can sit in the seat, and the seat will hold my weight, then a lighter person. It's not even textual manipulation, it's basic logic. And it may not even be part of the 13 midos. So when you have a Kal V'Chomer, it's even stronger than a Gzera Shavah. So Hillel established a Kal V'Chomer. He said, well, if a Tamid is Docha Shabbos, and a Tamid, there's no kares for violating a Tamid or omitting a Tamid, then Korban Pesach, which is the only Korban, and one of the only two mitzvahs to say that carries a kares for their omission, Korban Pesach and Mila, should certainly. These were the two statements that Hillel authored to justify his position. Interestingly enough, each of these statements were incomplete. Because we don't really know how Tamid is Zelcha Shabbos, that's the source, the Tamid Zelcha Shabbos and Pesach Zelcha Shabbos. Do we really know that Tamid is Zelcha Shabbos without learning it from Pesach possibly once we already established Pesach? Second of all, is a Tamid really less severe than Karban Pesach? Even though a Tamid has no Karis and a Pesach has Karis, a Tamid is Tadir, and a Tamid is an Ola, and a Pesach is not an Ola, and maybe Bekudash. So the scales of Kal V'Chomer are not necessarily indicative that Pesach is more severe. It sounds like these two drushos that Hillel offered, each of which was faulty, was a bit defective. So the question is, why was everyone so impressed? Sounds as if what was so impressive was not his an analytical skill or his sophistry or his ability to draw the Rishonim, but he had an actual Masar. That he wasn't just relaying information from his own creativity, but he was relaying statements that he had heard from Shmai and Nathaniel. This seems to be the record of the Ishami. The Ishami quotes the same story. If you look at source number 6, Avopi Shahayi Yoshev Vidarishlem Kalayot. This conversation lasted an entire day. And you'll see the second part of the conversation. And Hillel marshaled many different proofs for his position that Shechitas Karban Pesach could be Dacha Shabbos. Lo Kimlu Mimeno, they only surrendered Atshe Amar Lahen. I heard this directly from Shmai and Aftalian. At that point, they didn't just accept this position, but they felt so impressed, and to a degree, so inadequate with their own lack of knowledge, that they appointed him to be the Nasi. Let's read it in the Gemara Bavli, source number 1. This is 6 lines from the bottom. Miyad Hoshibu Barosh. At that point, they appointed him as the Nasi, and at that stage, B'nai Sarah were no longer the leaders, they were no longer the Nasi. Hillel takes over the Nasius, transfers it to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, transfers it to Shimon ben Gamliel, transfers it to that whole lineage that we're familiar with. Again, this is about 100 years before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, which replaced it probably around 30 BC when Hillel becomes the Nasi. Somewhere in 30 BC, 50 BC, is that clear? Chazal say that Hillel was the Nasi about 100 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not clear how accurate Chazal are meant to be when they say the number 100. Now, what's interesting is the voluntary, retiring or self-retiring of B'nai B'Sera. They were so quick to make way and cede to Hillel, who was obviously this upstart and young budding Tal V'Chacham. The Ishami also comments on 3 people in history who voluntarily deposed themselves and voluntarily surrendered their positions of power, and they're noted for their humility, and they're noted for their being able to defer to others, their deference. Source number 7, Shlosha Hinichol Kisram Ba'olam Hazeh. There are 3 people who deferred the royalty, the honor, the prestige in this world, the Yarshu Chai Olam Haba. And because of that humility and self-deference, they merit a share in the world. The cup. Who are they? Yonasan ben Chol. Yonasan was the rightful successor to his father, but his friendship with David HaMelech allowed him to cede to David and launch Malchus based David, of which Hillel was a part of, ironically. And, of course, Elazar ben Azariah. You mentioned Elazar ben Azariah the first night. Elazar ben Azariah was appointed as the Rosh Yeshiva, as the Nasi, after Rabbi Gamliel was deposed. Rabbi Gamliel was a very, very combative and disputational person. He imposed his will upon Rabbi Yeshua. The Chachamim felt a little bit uncomfortable with these strong-arm tactics, so they deposed Rabbi Gamliel, and they nominated Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as his successor. Famous story, Elazar ben Azariah comes home, asks his wife for advice. His wife says, you don't have any gray hairs, you're not going to be respected. At least according to Chazal, he grows several gray hairs, possibly 18 gray hairs, because he's 18 years old. And even though he's not 70 years, he feels, or he looks like he's 70, Harayin Kiven Shivin Shai. That day that Elazar ben Azariah became the Nasi, they had to add 500 benches to the Beis HaMikdash. Because Rabbi Gamliel was very adamant that only honest and authentic people could walk into the Beis HaMikdash, into the Beis HaMikdash. Elazar ben Azariah said, everyone should come to learn Torah, which is really a machlokus between Shammai and Hillel. This machlokus where the Torah should be spread to everyone, or just to the pure spirits and the pure minds and those who are sincere, already took place between Shammai and Hillel several generations before Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Gamliel. At a certain point, there's a reconciliation between the Chachamim and Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel is reinstated as the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Elazar ben Azariah allows this reinstatement, doesn't demand his proper title, and he serves once every month and once every third week as the Rosh Hashiva, the Nasi, alongside of Rav Gamliel. So Rav Elazar ben Azariah becomes that second figure that cedes the throne, even though he had been suggested as a replacement to Rav Gamliel. And the third is, of course, B'nai Bezera, who in this story, Nisachem cede to him. So this is the story of Hillel's appointment. Said otherwise, the Korban Pesach is responsible for Hillel's appointment as the Nasi. Or in a broader sense, who knows if without Korban Pesach, Hillel would have remained in Israel. He possibly would have returned to Babel, continued his life in Babel, and perhaps established Babel as the center of Torah, even during the days of the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, there was a vibrant Jewish community in Babel since the Korban Beis HaMikdash Rishon. Only 43,000 Jews returned with Ezra. There still were thousands, hundreds of thousands of Jews in Babel. Hillel was the leader of his generation. So history would have been very different. Our Masara would have been very different if not for this Korban Pesach. So you mentioned how instrumental Korban Pesach is for being in Israel and that generation in the desert, that shout out, make sure you bring the Korban Pesach, make sure you don't surrender this chance to enter Eretz Yisrael. Yoshiel knows we're about to leave Eretz Yisrael. Let's offer one last Korban Pesach before our departure. At this point, the Masara is determined by a Korban Pesach event. Korban Pesach occurs in on Shabbos, and because of the uncertainty, Hillel rises to the position of the Nasi and decides to remain in Eretz Yisrael as the Nasi, and at least till the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, all these great Torah personalities, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, are all centered. They may not have been Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Shimon Bar Yochai maybe would have never made it to Israel. He was the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, who was the Talmud of Elazar ben Yeshua, was the Talmud of Yochanan ben Zakkai, Talmud of Hillel. His entire lineage, the last 100 years, 150 years in Israel, is because Hillel is attracted to Israel. And remains in Israel because of his Korban Pesach story. However, there's a part two of this story, and the part two is also written. At this point, another question arises. Okay, we can sacrifice the Korban Pesach even though it's Shabbos, but can you carry the knife to the Beis HaMikdash through Rosh HaSarabim on Shabbos? Carrying a knife is called machshirin. Machshirin is not the malach itself, but peripheral activity is necessary for the malach. This is the reason that this story is quoted in the fifth parak of Pesachim. Sorry, in the sixth parak of Pesachim, Elul Devarim, there's a famous machlokus between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yoshua, which type of peripheral activities can be performed on Yom Tov proper. So, for example, you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov, because you can't really cook before Yom Tov, the food will spoil. But can you perform other activities on regular, regular Yom Tov? So because it's a whole question about machshirin, peripheral activities which could be prepared before Yom Tov, whether you can perform them on Yom Tov. So here the question became, what about carrying the knife necessary to shaft the animal on Shabbos, Erev Pesach, to the Azara? Will that also be done? So what happened? Line number 6 from the bottom. Hischel mikantra mikvarim. So when Hillel immediately, embarrassed the others, but when they didn't know the answer to the first question, Amar lahem mikvarim lachem she'ela mibabo ve'ei nasi alechem. Why may now you're nasi? Atzlus shayisavachem, because you were too lazy. Shaloshimashtim shnei gidali adar shmai v'tal. You learned Torah, but you're too lazy to ask your rebbeim this question. I asked them the question. I remember it. Okay, Amar lo Rebbe. So now they ask them. Now that you're a Rebbe, we have another question for you. Three lines in the bottom. Shachach lo hevi sakim mer Shabbos maho. If you didn't bring the knife to the Beis Hamikdash before Shabbos, can you bring the knife also to Rosh Hashanah? Amar lahem, so now Hillel has to surrender. Halacha zu shamati v'shachachti. I forgot this halacha. So the Gemara comments a little bit later on this story. We'll get back to some of the halachas regarding the source number 3. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, kol ha-misyahir. Anyone that's arrogant, takes pride, vanity in themselves, or in the Torah, im chachamu, ver chacham, chachmasa misalek esimah. They lose some of their knowledge. In Nabihu, if they're a Nabi, Nibuasa Misalakas Yemena. The spirits diminish Nibua. In Chachamu Chachmasa Misalakas Yemena Mihil. The story of Hillel serves as the example where Talmud Chacham forgot his star because of arrogance, because of cockiness. Rish Lakish adds another parallel. Source number 3, line 3. Kol Adam Shekoi, some person is angry. In Chachamu Chachmasa Misalakas Yemena. In Nabihu, Nibuasa Misalakas Yemena. And he learns the fact from Moshe. Moshe gets angry in Parshas Matos at the returning generals during the war with Midian, And because he's angry because they spared some Midianite women, he forgets the halachas of Hagalas Kalim. And the halachas of Hagalas Kalim, had a kasher Kalim, have to be delivered by Elazar, who's now the Kohen, in the wake of Aharon's death in Parshas Chukos. Now it's interesting that if a person is cocky or angry, they forget their Torah. This could be seen as a punishment, because these are two vices, these are two terrible traits and characteristics. So the punishment is you forget your Torah, you forget your Nevuah, you forget your Chachma. It could also be seen as something else. Rav Lichtenstein once told me that if you don't understand the Tosfos, that's not an intellectual limitation. That's a moral flaw. How could it be a moral flaw? Because if you saw every word of Tosfos as the word of Hashem, of course you'd understand it. You'd take every effort to understand it. You wouldn't stop at any level. If I knew that my life was I had 1 year to live, there's some antidote in this world that could save me, I'd provide every resource and I'd take every measure and I'd try to find that antidote. So our Torah acquisition is not just driven by our intellectual acumen, it's driven by our attitude, how we care and how we see Torah. If you ask me, events that took place 20 years ago, I'll probably remember them. If you ask me the Torah events 20 years ago, I may remember them this deep. I don't forget my birthday, I don't forget my anniversary, but I forget Torah. Because Torah isn't as deeply entrenched in my soul as it should be. Hashem came to me in a dream tonight and spoke to me. And let's say I remember that dream when I woke up, I'd write it down and I'd recite it every day until I committed it to memory or I never forget it. So your ability to understand Torah and to remember Torah is not just an intellectual factor, it's also how much you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's in Torah, how much you see Torah as the word of Hashem. Which means that the more of HaKadosh Baruch Hu I see, the more Torah I can recall. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu fades from my view even slightly, I start to forget my Torah because I'm not as clued in and attuned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when you're angry, obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't in the room. You can't be angry. You can't have a fuse and be on a tirade if Hashem's in the room. The quickest way not to get angry is to think about someone you respect really much. If they were in the room, would you be angry? If that person, a Rebbe, a parent, a Gadol HaDor, is in the room, of course you'd be more tempered and more moderate. You won't be screaming and ranting. So if a person is angry, as I'll say, Kol HaKadosh Kilov and Avodah Zarah, because Hashem has partially left your view. If you're cocky, if you're Baal Gadol, also HaKadosh Baruch Hu has partially left the room because you're seeing a little bit less. The Gemara Tumurah says, or Moshe was about to die, so Yeshua comes in, and Moshe says, I'm about to die, do you have any questions? And Yeshua says, no, I'm good to go. And Yeshua was a big Anav. Benari Yeshua le'yamash mitocha o'ach. He was a classic Anav. He still called himself Hoshea. Even at this stage, the Gemara says, in the Parshas Vayelach. But at that point, the Gemara says he forgot 16,000 halachas. He didn't forget 16,000 halachas because he suffered dementia. He forgot 16,000 halachas because he was maintaining this grasp on Torah because he saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Torah. And the second he saw a little bit of himself, he saw a little bit less of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When he saw a little bit less of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah was no longer contained. That's what happened to Hillel. Hillel wasn't punished. Hashem didn't all of a sudden wave a wand and create forgetfulness in Hillel. Hillel felt HaKadosh Baruch Hu a little bit less because he felt himself a little bit more. And because of that, he lost a little bit of his Torah. And if you were a Navi, similarly, you'd lose a little bit of your Nevuah. What's fascinating is Hillel's recovery. Because we all know that Hillel goes down in history as a great, humble person. Source number 8. This is the Mishnah and others. Don't be quick-tempered and don't have a quick fuse. Ketzad. Melame chia anav ki Hillel hazake. You should be humble like Hillel. So there's room for improvement. At this point, Hillel was a little bit arrogant, at least maybe not in our terms, but in his terms. It's hard to judge people in our own yardsticks, but at least in his terms, he was seen as a little bit arrogant. But then he goes down in history as the paradigm of a humble person. And a humble person, one of the manifestations of a humble person is they're not angry. It's a fascinating avisurdasa, which traces the source of anger to deservedness and entitlement. If you're not entitled, it's hard to feel angry. If you're entitled, you're more apt to feel angry. I deserve this. I didn't get it. Someone took it. I want my just deserves on aren't necessarily being. So the way to deal with anger is to try to work in entitlement. And this is the famous story where the person comes and knocks on Hillel's door, Erev Shabbos, and asks him inane, silly questions. And Hillel maintains his cool rather than saying, this is my time to prepare for Shabbos. So Hillel recovers from this moment and becomes known as not just the Nasi, but known as the humble person. Anyway, what happened? Are you allowed to carry the knife? Hillel forgot. No one knew the answer. So Hillel said, you know what? There are two ways to decide halacha. One is information, drushos, analysis, masara. Another way is just see what the minhag is. Am Yisrael, their minhagim tend to be, this is the 26th yard site of Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, that I was supposed to learn with towards the end of his life. And one of the hallmarks of his Torah was that every minhag comes from some halachic source. Minhagim aren't just arbitrary. Minhagim don't just, the reason we say Shirah Malos after Minchon Shabbos is because of Moshe Rabbeinu. The reason we, everything has a minhag. Every minhag has a source. Nothing is just witchcraft that happened to evolve and take root. There's a minhag, the sanctity of Am Yisrael, things that minhagim that last and take hold have halachic basis. So that's what Hillel told them. Source number one, going back to source number one, three lines in the bottom. Hanach lehem liYisrael, Hillel said. Let's see what the Jews will do tomorrow. There ain't Nevi'im heim, there may not be Nevi'im, there ain't Nevi'im heim. They're the children and the descendants of Nevi'im. Lamachar, what did they do? They stuck the knives into the hair of the goat. So they didn't have to carry the goat, the knife, through Rosh Hasharabim. The goat would walk. You'd leave the goat, or you won't be pulling the goat would be walking, following the shepherd, and the goat would be carrying the knife, and therefore, you're not supposed to carry the knife on Shabbos. Fascinatingly, this scenario with the goat has three halacha complications. So just teach a little halacha of Karban Pesach. Question number one. You can't use a carbon to do work for you. That's called me'ila. You're not allowed to get hana from anything which is hekdesh. So the scenario where your goat or your sheep would carry your knife that you need to the Beis HaMikdash would be a violation of me'ila. So source number two, the Gemara says, ha'ka'avet avodah b'kotchin, it's me'ila. Where it says, well, Hillel happens to make another takana. He told people, whenever you offer a carbon, wait till the last minute to be makdish the animal. Just bring the animal to the Beis HaMikdash, and as you enter the Azara, then say, it's an ola. As you enter the Azara, say, it's a chatas. As you enter the Azara, because if you call it an ola, or a chatas, or an asham, too early, you may violate me'ila by using the animal, putting something on its back, leaning on it. So one of Hillel's takanas preempted this concern. He had made another takana that you should never be makdish an animal till you enter the Azara. This preempted the concern. Second problem is, how can you be makdish a Karban Pesach on Shabbos? Presumably, if you're going to be makdish the Karban Pesach on Shabbos, some people have to be makdish it, right? Hillel's instruction, wait until the last minute to be makdish. You shouldn't be involved in any business transactions on Shabbos. The Gemara Beitza says that anything that looks like business, maso matan, weighing fruits, and any form of halachic activity that looks like a business transaction, like arafin and charamim and hekdeshos. You shouldn't be makdish anything. You shouldn't do arafin. Even a question, should you be made for nedarim? We paskin. You can't be made for nedarim on Shabbos. So the second question of the Gemara is source number two, paragraph two, Pesach b'Shabbos hechi makdish like. Hillel instructed everyone to wait till the last minute to be makdish come Pesach. You violate the Issur Rabbanan of Masel Matam on Shabbos. This is your Shabbos, it's not a Pesach. The Gemara says, well, anything that you're obligated to bring on that day, if you're makdish it, isn't the problem of masa matan. It's not voluntary. You're not willfully entering some transaction. Everyone knows the only reason you're being makdish the Karban Pesach thing is hiring a Karban Pesach on Erev Pesach. So it doesn't leave language. It's a very important Gemara towards understanding the Issur of masa matan for Shabbos. Why should it make a difference? That's the Gemara's answer. The final answer, final problem is mechamech. You're not allowed to encourage your animal to walk on Shabbos through Rosh Hasharabim to do malacha or not only in Rosh Hasharabim, that's an issur called mechamer. So by egging on the animal to walk, whether it's a Kodesh animal or a Chulin animal, you violate the issur of mechamer. So the answer is, the Gemara says, source number two, paragraph three, v'lo mechamer, this is mechamer k'lachar yad. You didn't egg it on the normal way, you did it backwards. But still, k'lachar yad is also, the Gemara says, well, it's mechamer k'lachar yad, in the Beis HaMikdash, for a mitzvah, and for that, we're willing to create latency. So that is what took place on this day, that fateful Pesach, around the year 100 or so, 100 maybe, somewhere between 100 and 50 BCE. Hillel happens to be available. They consult with him. This leads to his ascent. At that point, he remains in Eretz Yisrael, gets a little bit self-satisfied, and he forgets a little of his Torah. And he says, you know what, let's see what the Jewish people will perform tomorrow. And the minhag carries on. Thank you.